Everybody, Pick Six Podcast here on a Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody from a week ago. Happy Black Friday. That game's over too. We skipped last week for the holidays, and now we're back. Sam McCune along with Dirk Chatelain and Evan Bland to talk about Husker football, Husker hoops, which is kind of underway, and the growing mess in the Big Ten that has become evident in the last 48 hours, and we'll talk a little bit about that too, and the small potentiality of Nebraska having to play a rematch game against Ohio State, which would just be too rich for words to have December 12th in Memorial Stadium have to play Ohio State again with the entire league hoping that you lost badly. That could happen though. That could potentially happen, and we'll talk about it when we get there. I want to remind everybody that our sponsor is Team Schwalbach. The Schwalbach Agency is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska. They also insure all the big boy toys. You probably put some of those away for the winter, but motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles, and I guess snowmobiles, if and when it snows. Not supposed to snow much here in Nebraska in December. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation, insurance reviews and quotes. They're going to make sure all of their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can reach them at 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach. All right, let's start here. Nebraska is 1-4 this season, right? 1-4? 1-4 after a 26-20 loss to Iowa. They are playing Purdue this weekend, a team that has beaten them two times in a row and has a defensive coordinator that I know is deeply motivated to beat Nebraska for multiple reasons, not just because he worked at Nebraska, but because this is the coaching staff that essentially dissed his conflict trophy back in 2016. And left it on the bench. They took the win, and they left the trophy. And, you know, Bill Moose is out there talking about Scott Frost is the coach. He's great. He's sort of, you know, making these sort of, it's going to be good. The facilities are going to be reduced in scope and, size, even though it's going to cost the same. On Friday, most likely at the Board of Regents meeting, the recruiting class is a little interesting. They lost a guy from it. I'm not sure they were all that heartbroken about that, but they did lose a guy from the recruiting class. And there's just a lot of questions swirling around the program, and they're going to Purdue. And, I think Nebraska fans are in now this tough tension point of, we really want this to work. We're not sure it's going to work. We're not sure if we can say anything bad because we don't want to be seen as disloyal, all these other things. So there's a lot going on 1 week after Thanksgiving, isn't there?
Swirling, Sam, lots of swirling. When things really hit the fan, with Nebraska football, it feels like we use that word a lot because there really is a lot of just, sort of, you know, surrounding white noise almost to the program. And I don't get the sense that it has, you know, reached a 2017 or 2014 level yet. But there is a real sense of, I think, just, I don't know what the word is. It's not quite agony, but it's just sort of it's just discomfort. It's like a constant headache right now. In following this program. And, mm-hmm. and I certainly get the sense with fans that, as you said, I mean, they don't feel freed up to just, you know, swing away and criticize everything.
That's right.
But at the same time, you know, they're sort of wrestling with the confusion of it and the chaos of it and the overall disappointment of it. I mean, Scott Frost is 10-19 as Nebraska football's head coach. That is abysmal.
If you wrote about this, it's interesting.
Yeah, if you would have told people that 3 years ago that he'd start his career 10-19, I don't know who would have believed you. I mean, mm-hmm. even the biggest doubters, the biggest skeptics, they wouldn't have believed that. So it's been a very, very rough road so far, and you're going to a place where Nebraska has had two notable, just absolute debacles the last 6 years. I mean,
yes.
2015 is maybe the worst game Nebraska has ever played, and 2019 was – it wasn't as bad, but, man, people walked away, and they were about as upset as I've seen them with a lot of the goal line play calling. So this is not a place where Nebraska has a lot of fond memories, and I think what we've learned is – basically every game at this point is interesting, even the ones that aren't interesting to anyone else. They're sort of full of, full of little twists and turns, and I expect nothing less on Saturday.
Yeah, when Purdue runs out of that big belly of the train, the train horns firing off and there's steam. I always love their entrance into the stadium, especially in the last, like in 2015, when there's basically no one at the stadium for the game, and there's like 10,000 people there, and it's just miserable, and Nebraska can't get it going, and then they lose the way they lost, and it's like, well, I think Mike Riley's going to have a hard time making this thing work. And yet here we are. I think that was like maybe the sixth loss of his tenure.
Halloween.
Yeah. And you had written a piece that hasn't gone up yet, but I think is really interesting, about the 19th loss in each coach's tenure since Solich, actually since Devaney, and that Devaney's 19th loss came in his 11th year, Osborne's 19th loss came in his 8th year, and then it goes from there, and obviously Scott Frost's 19th loss came in year 3 of a truncated, COVID-truncated schedule. It's just – it seems almost unbelievable that he's hit 19 so quickly.
It is unbelievable. And as you just said, it's truncated. I mean, Nebraska was supposed to play Cincinnati this year. Mm-hmm. Nebraska was supposed to – I mean, South Dakota State is a game they should have won, but the way they're playing, that would have been no sure thing. I mean, in some ways, the shortened season may be a blessing in disguise for Nebraska because, mm-hmm. It's sort of – it limits the collapse. I'm not saying it would have collapsed the same way because, they had some, obstacles, starting with Ohio State, for instance, that they wouldn't have had otherwise, but they just haven't looked very good. And I think, maybe not having to play Wisconsin and Cincinnati, for instance, gives them a little bit of a buffer going into 2021 where they don't have to totally bottom out, but it's just really been a rough ride. And I think that, I don't know about you guys, but I just sense the overall spirit of the fan base in a really, really, almost an awkward place. It's just so weird because nobody wants to even talk about the idea of Frost not being able to figure this out. But at the same time, it's like, man, you lose and you lose and you lose. And it basically looks the same every Saturday. And it's really hard to wrap your arms around. I think the easiest sort of defense mechanism that people have is just to sort of pull away from it. They don't mm-hmm. want to engage and just blast away. It's easier to just say, okay, I'm going Christmas shopping on Amazon.com and, mm-hmm. I'll check back in with the Huskers later.
Yard work on Friday. It was a nice day. I know people who did yard work.
Yeah, you guys are a little bit closer to it, obviously, than I am. But I'm just curious what your sense of the people you talk to and how they're kind of grappling with the emotions of the whole thing.
Well, I can answer that question, but go ahead, Evan. I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I thought the Illinois game was really the first time people started to feel a little bit more free to air their grievances, I guess, or start their Festivus early, if you will. it really was. It was, I mean, and I'm sure you guys got emails too, but it was just like this idea that, okay, if we can't count on beating Illinois, if we cannot even being competitive with them at home, what's going on? I think it's interesting to look at what Michigan's doing, with Jim Harbaugh. I think there's a lot of corollaries there with him at Michigan and Scott Frost at Nebraska and seeing what kind of, you know, how that's fallen apart and how he's on the outs there. You know, it's like, you know, Nebraska is like a year or two away from that potentially, where if the bottom continues to fall out, it kind of forces the hand of the fan base a little bit. But yeah, I agree. I mean, there's just kind of a weariness to everything that's going on. You know, we, like you said, Dirk, I mean, we're engaged in it every day. And so it's a little bit different, than someone who can maybe just pull back and check in every week. But I think at this point in the year, it's been interesting to see, like, it's not even so much about the games. It's become about, you know, the transfers, or it's become about watching what the Big Ten does with Ohio State, or it becomes about watching what Mackenzie Milton does. Like, there's just all these other little things that you can kind of go off on and get distracted by, because people don't want to, kind of like you said, tackle this idea that what if Scott Frost doesn't figure it out?
Yeah, I think sometimes when you're in the, you know, you're among the trees, it's not always easy to look and zoom out and kind of see the forest. But the forest numbers are this: they've lost 19 games. They're 11-19 in 3 years. Is that it, or is it 10-19?
10-19.
So they're coming up on the 30-game mark here against Purdue. They're 10-19 in 29 games. More than 35 players have transferred from the program. You're in year three, and you don't know who your starting quarterback is going to be week to week, and you don't know who it'll be for 2021. You don't know who your starting running back is going to be in 2021, because the senior that you were hoping to lean on this year, who could kind of get you through, has been hurt. You don't know who your number one receiver in 2021 is going to be, because the guy that you recruited out of junior college that everybody kind of thought would be that guy hasn't played really this season except for a handful of snaps at Northwestern. And you don't really know exactly who it's going to be. It could be Wandale Robinson. It could be Manning. It could be some other person. You don't know exactly what the defense is going to look like in 2021, because you don't know how many of these seniors who have made the defense better. I think they're a better defense than they have been really since 2016. You don't know how many of those guys are really going to want to stick around and go through this again. They've already been through as many losing seasons as I'm sure they ever want to go through. And so I don't know how many of those guys are going to want to stick around. And then, you know, again, you're facing Purdue, and if you lose this game, I'm not saying they will, but if you do, you've lost to Purdue and Iowa and Wisconsin every single time you faced them. And that's, you know, those are your peers. Those are the teams on your side. And you've lost to Northwestern twice. You've lost to Illinois once. We'll see about Minnesota if the game's played. But those are all pretty concerning markers. And, you know, I've always been on the side of, okay, look, this isn't going to be decided or defined by year one or year two or year three. And I thought when they kind of switched to McCaffrey and they're going to start going to this up-tempo, fast offense and kind of just trying to let it happen, we were at least going to see sort of the identity or the vision. But what they've decided to do is go back to Martinez. And, you know, Vokolek said it earlier this week, tight end Travis Vokolek said, hey, well, the offense moves faster with McCaffrey. So everybody knows who's zipping it along a little bit better. But I think they went back to Martinez because he's probably the better option right now. He's a better passer. But when you put him in the game, things slow down. They just do. And I think they've got an issue as it relates to not only the immediate present, but also what the future looks like. I think that's the question, is how bright is the future? And to me, 2021, if you're reviewing 2020 as like a preseason to 2021, where the schedule's hellacious and Nebraska has a chance to be a really good team, even if they're 9-4, I think you'd have to say that 2021 at this moment looks really cloudy. You don't really know what the team's going to be like next season.
Yeah, it has become very, very difficult to envision a breakout season.
And it's hard. And
I say that knowing what Minnesota did last year, knowing what Northwestern is doing this year, I know that other schools are doing it. I know you can go from 4 or 5 wins to 10 or 11. You see schools doing it all over the country. But when you watch Nebraska play and just the flaws that plague them week after week after week, mm-hmm. I mean, the microcosm is the Adrian Martinez 30-yard run that gets called back by a holding penalty. I mean, it's very difficult to imagine them just like snapping their fingers next fall and saying, we're putting all that behind us. We're a different team. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. It's so baked into the wallpaper at this point. I just don't know how you snap out of it. I mean, it's going to take a transformational player. It's going to take a serious change in player development. It's obviously not going to be a scheme change. So I don't know, guys. I mean, I went from thinking, you know, 6 months ago that, hey, maybe this season can be a little bit of a you get your foot in the door and then you really blast it open in 2021, to suddenly thinking, how do you just change the habit? It's like telling me at 39 years old that I'm, you know, going to change who I am. It's very, very difficult. And I have a hard time understanding how Nebraska is going to do that.
Rocky Balboa changed at the end of Rocky IV. So let's just pump the brakes on the inability to change. It might take putting on a jacket with fur lapels and fur cuffs and training in Russia, but you can change, Dirk.
Well, we know
Nebraska football can change.
We know Frost has an affinity for Uzbekistan, so maybe there's maybe there's a training facility over there.
I don't want to be too much of a downer. Like I think it, look, if they won their last three games, let's say they beat Purdue, which I think they can. Let's say they beat Minnesota, which I think they can. And let's say they get paired against, I don't know, Michigan, which I think they might, or Rutgers. Can they beat Michigan or Rutgers? I do think they can beat one of those two teams. Yes. So it's all possible. I mean, you can line it all up and say they win their last three and we're sitting here in a month and they're 4-4 and they're playing in some bowl game. Maybe. I think a lot of the bowl games are going to get canceled if they're not in Florida. And they're playing in some bowl game and you're like, oh, this season turned around. Like it, you know, and you could actually say, hey, they won three in a row and then they got into a bowl game and whatever happens there, God darn it. Everybody kind of saw it at the end of the year and we see the progress and then everybody sort of, you know, hops into 2021 thinking, maybe, you know, this isn't so bad. So that's possible. You always hold out the chance for that being the case. But the flip side of the coin is a lot rides on Saturday. A lot rides on a Purdue game, a game against a Purdue team that I find to be very similar to Nebraska. Their coach is frustrated. I'm not sure he should be, but he's like, you watch his press conferences and he's enormously frustrated with their lack of progress. I think he thought they'd be further along and probably they ought to be given their offensive talent, but he's enormously frustrated. They gave up a game to Rutgers that was very Nebraska-esque. I mean, they shouldn't have lost the game. They're 30-20. They give up a kickoff return, and then they basically the lights go out on both sides of the ball, and they lose the game. And but so this is a swing game for both teams, and if Nebraska does not pick up that win at Purdue, it's going to be harder and harder to see how things end well. And the one similarity I would say to this week that I found with the Illinois week is I kind of thought going into Penn State, Nebraska was going to have a whatever. A little bit of moxie because they were A, going to switch quarterbacks and everybody kind of knew it. And B, they had that competition week where everybody could kind of earn playing time. Then they went in, they won that game. And then they went into Illinois and there wasn't a lot of motivation. Like there was not a lot of buttons to push for that game. It's like, well, we're favored by 17 and let's build on our success. And that's not, you know, negative motivation. And they lost. And then they had the negative motivation of, well, we stunk against Illinois and they were playing Iowa. And I think the players at Nebraska actually view Iowa as a rival. And so I anticipated Nebraska would play its best game of the season against Iowa and still lose, which is what happened. I picked 27-21 and it was 26-20. This week, you're right back to what is the motivation this week? And like, what button can you push? And I think everybody kind of knows both quarterbacks are going to play. Everybody kind of knows they owe Purdue one maybe, but what is the button this week? And I don't know that there's a button. And so I think you wonder with a young team how they're going to adjust to a buttonless week. No buttons. It's just a zip up. So I don't know. You know, like that's the concern is that I don't know that Frost has a lot of things that he can lean on. He's just going to have to outcoach, and his team's going to have to outplay a team that has outcoached and outplayed Nebraska in the last 2 years.
So I wonder if Nebraska.
Wait a second. I thought you weren't as negative as me. I was being.
I'm pragmatic.
Yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know. Like, no, like, I think Purdue is not a great matchup for Nebraska. I haven't thought they were for the last 2 years. I haven't thought they were for years now. I don't like the it's hard to win there because there's no juice and they have no reputation, but they've got good players and their coach, I think, has a thing for Nebraska based on that winnable game comment that was made 2 years ago that shouldn't have been made, but was. And I think Purdue looks at this game as a very big deal. They want to win this game and, you know, stick it to Nebraska. So I think it's going to be a tough one. That said, Purdue's run defense cannot stop quarterback run. Nebraska does that really well, so Nebraska should have success. Go ahead, Evan. Sorry.
Oh, I was just, you know, in a weird way, I wonder if Husker fans have more confidence in a team coached, you know, coordinated by Bob Diaco, or if they have more confidence that their own team can play a mistake-free game. Like, it's the whole, you know, stoppable force versus a movable object kind of situation.
It is.
Do you guys have any Bob Diaco stories from 2017? I mean, Sam, you've written a lot of good stuff about him, but – like, I remember that Purdue game in 2017 where they came back to win by one late. And, you know, you go off to the side of the field and the team changes. And Bob Diaco comes out and he's in his full suit. He had the black shirts, pocket square going on. And he's doing interviews, you know, just off the side at Ross-Ade Stadium. That was Mike Riley's last win it ended up being.
It is.
That 1 point final, I was just like, how ridiculous is this? And now he's on the other side, and I'm really bummed that we don't get to hear from him this week. But, man, what a lifetime of memories in one weird season.
Yeah, Bob Diaco is not bummed to not hear from himself. The biggest story – I have two stories about Bob. The one was always about the conflict trophy and just his answer to me about that. And, you know, that always – I always got a kick out of this. You know, he was so pissed off about that because he made this trophy and, you know, he kind of invented the idea of the trophy, and then they played for the trophy in 2015. They won it, they kept it, and then they put the trophy on UCF's bench at the end of the 2016 game, and then UCF left it there. And they kind of just dissed him, and then you know, he was made a laughing stock. And then he gave, I'm not kidding, like a 20-minute press conference about it. After, you know, like the Monday afterward, where he was just unbelievably angry. That's where the Nickelodeon comment came from. And, you know, where Bob goes, I think he's got a creative and interesting and dynamic mind. I really do. But unfortunately, he operates in a sport, that can be pretty maddening in that way. Like you're not allowed to create new things unless you're the right kind of person. Like he was just trying to do something to juice up that game, and nobody was buying it. You know, people just didn't buy it. And you know, that's kind of how our culture is actually these days. But the other thing is that I had a sit down interview with Bob the summer before the season. And I mean, he was really honest about not wanting to talk to the media. And he also, you know, you could see the level of OCD. Like he lined up his phones, and he would line up his phones with the tips of his hands. So like, you know, coaches have multiple phones because you don't want to have like, you have a recruiting phone that's like, you know, you just have multiple phones. It's how it works. Like you don't want to have to text with 300 recruits and your wife and your kid, whatever. So, you know, he would line them up though. Like they had to be lined up, and they were all kind of sitting neatly on the desk. It was very, you know, he's just a very specific kind of guy. And then he would say, you'd ask him a question and he wouldn't know how to answer it. And then you just kind of sit there for like 30 seconds. And then he would start talking and he just wouldn't stop, you know, and you're just like, now I know why you don't want to talk. Like you just don't. So that's him. Like once he starts, he just keeps going. He can't put a lid on it.
can we agree that that is like maybe the best own ever by an opposing head coach to just leave the homemade trophy that the opposing coach created to just leave it on the bench? I mean, that is the most – that is quintessential Scott Frost right there. In that is the most Frost own I've ever heard, sort of in all the good and bad ways.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I think Frost at his winningest is that kind of guy. He's not a BS artist. He's not one of these guys that's like
–
what's the right word for it?
He's
not one of these guys that like gets into all this pomp and circumstance the way a guy like Bob Diaco would. But simultaneously, yeah, so Diaco has a lot of momentum, like a lot of motivation going into this week. And I'm sure it means a lot to him. I don't know that Purdue can stop Nebraska with any regularity though, because of Purdue does not quite have enough run defenders. Simultaneously, Nebraska's defense is going to have a hell of a time with Purdue because Purdue has a great offense. It's fun to watch, and they've got two receivers that Nebraska does not have. Actually, they have three. David Bell, Rondale Moore, who, you know, Wando Robinson's almost as good as Moore, but not as good. And then Milton Wright. Nebraska does not have those players. If they did, they'd be a hell of a lot better team than they are. And that's one of the challenges going forward for the Huskers is finding players like that. Purdue's managed to do it. Nebraska hasn't yet.
Dirk, do you have any Diaco memories?
I was there for the strain. I mean, I was right in front of him for the, do you see the strain? And Sam's game story that night was just gold. I mean, Sam has had, you know, 20 game stories in the last 11 years. In the last 10 years, and by the way, Sam's coming up on 10 years with the World Herald here pretty soon, but he's had probably 20 to 25 game stories that are just gold. And that Northwestern one was right at the top of the list. I mean, you could not capture the absurdity of that media session on deadline better than Sam did. So I'll never forget that. And I guess the biggest mystery to me with Diaco is just how the heck Mike Riley got talked into that. I mean, that surely was not Mike Riley's idea. And I don't know if I'll never forget. It wasn't Diaco, but it was when he fired Mark Banker, and I'll never forget where I was when that happened. Cause it was just like, holy crap, this is, this program is really taking a chance. In many ways, it was very similar to the, you know, to the Sam Keller risk that Bill Callahan took in 2000. Now that it was a little different because, you know, Keller was on campus. You know, it wasn't just total mercenary, but it was very comparable to that. And it's a good lesson, I think, for people who are, who just always think that a bold, acquisition, either a transfer or a, you know, coordinator or something like that is the answer. That thing can backfire. And when it does, it can go south in a hurry. So I think there's a cautionary tale there in what Nebraska did with Bob Diaco in 2017.
How do you think it's going with Matt Lubick? Or does it matter because he's not really calling the plays?
I just don't sense that it matters that much. Guys, I mean, I'm really, really disappointed with Nebraska's passing game and specifically the wide receiver position. I just don't know how it fell apart the way that it did. I mean, when you look at how many – I don't really count Wandale Robinson as a receiver. I mean, he's sort of a slash position. But when you look at how many balls are actually being targeted to wide receivers – I mean, I played in a flag football league in my 20s in Lincoln, And I was the, 5'9" slow guy that they'd put in the slot and, throw me a, my brother was a quarterback and they'd throw me a, I was basically the 11th guy on the team on a flag football team in the Rick Stein Lincoln City League. And, they'd throw me a 5-yard out on 3rd and 14 or something like that when I was the 4th option check down. And that's basically what the Nebraska wide receiver room is right now. I mean, where are the guys that if you're a defensive coordinator, you have to worry about? There's nobody out there. And I just think it's really hard in today's college football to have a good offense if you don't have those guys. And by the way, even when those guys are open, Nebraska's quarterbacks don't see them or can't get them the ball. So the passing offense, it just is totally befuddling to me at this point.
So Nebraska's faced, they've faced two elite defenses in Northwestern and Iowa. They're great. I mean, they're really good defenses. Nebraska scored 13 against Northwestern and 20 against Iowa. Those two teams combined are allowing 32 points a game this year. You add 20 and 13, and Nebraska scored 33. And so, essentially, Nebraska is doing average against those elite defenses. But in reality, they haven't done – I mean, Penn State does not have a great defense. We have to stop saying that they do. They don't. And Ohio State doesn't have a great defense. They don't. I mean, they haven't been great all year, to be honest with you. So they've played, and then Illinois does not have a great defense. And so they played three not great defenses and two great defenses. And they have performed below statistical expectations against the three not great ones and average to the great ones. And now they play Purdue, which gives up 28 points a game. And I'm, I think Nebraska could get to 24. I think they could get to 31. I think they could score 17. It's really hard to see a Nebraska team that just blows people out of the water offensively. And the challenge with that, again, is Scott Frost came here with that vision. He's not Pat Fitzgerald. Pat Fitzgerald's offense is designed to not screw up, one, and two, to help protect the defense. It's a ball control pro style. We're going to matriculate the ball down the field like Hank Stram offense. Scott Frost came here to blow the doors off of the Big Ten, and the doors have stayed closed and padlocked. Like it just isn't happening. And so is Matt Lubick, is he? I don't think he's hurting anything. And in fact, I think he's added a few concepts that have worked. But I'm waiting to see who's going to supercharge this operation. Is it going to be a player? Is it going to be a coach? Is it going to be a shift in strategy? Because unfortunately, I'm not seeing that supercharge moment. And it's hard to sell me on, well, the offensive line is young, when I kind of doubt Matt Farniok and Brendan Hymus are coming back next year, which means you're going to be starting either a true freshman tackle or you're going to be starting a redshirt sophomore tackle and Brant Banks, who hasn't played much this year, and you're going to be starting a brand new guard. Like I find it a hard sell to think that, everything's just going to get so much better. When Nebraska runs screen passes, it doesn't look like they can execute them. When Purdue runs one, it looks beautiful. Why is there such a difference between the execution of such a basic play? It's hard for me to be sold on, well, it's because of those two redshirt freshmen, who, by the way, are not the worst linemen on the team. Like, those two guys, I would not say – I don't think Bryce Benhart and Ethan Piper are playing that poorly. So, to me, that's the biggest question is how they can – and maybe they can change this in 3 weeks and their offense can start to play a lot better. But that's the ongoing concern going forward. It's kind of like – and we'll talk about basketball in a second. It's not unlike the fact – that the Nebraska basketball team is built to shoot threes and they can't. They're not hitting them.
It's a terrible combination. It's like worst case scenario. And I'm not saying Nebraska is the worst offense in the country because they're far from that, but you don't have big playability and you don't execute the little stuff well enough to put together a 10 or 12 play drive.
That's right.
I mean, it's like,
that's hard. That's a problem. Exactly.
Right. It's like you can't score in three plays and you can't score in 12 plays because at some point you're going to have a breakdown and a bad snap or a holding penalty or a drop pass. And it's like, how do you score if that's the truth? And that's the truth right now.
Yes, I totally agree. And Nebraska's defense is better, but let's not pretend the Northwestern's offense is any good. I mean, they're averaging 327 yards a game and 4.3 yards a play. They're not a good offense. So, yeah, Nebraska shut them down for the most part. And Iowa is a better offense, but they're not, you know, they're not blowing the doors off of anybody either. And so there's just these concern pieces where you just – if the formula was the offense has to be elite and it's not elite, then what's the new formula? Evan, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to follow up on kind of this player development idea again, because it's like I just feel like you can look all over the country and see – guys that are freshmen breaking out at different skill positions, especially. I mean, Purdue's had that a couple of years now with David Bell and Rondale Moore. And with Nebraska, it's always so – it just feels painful oftentimes, you know. It's like the freshmen barely can get in. Even in a year when there's all kinds of opportunity at wide receiver, they still get, you know, guys like Xavier Betts in for handfuls of
play. You know, that's encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, he's out there a little bit, but, like, it feels like if he were at another school, like, he could be, you know, dominating at stretches. And so I just – it feels so hard oftentimes for how Nebraska does it. Where, you know, they say that they're young, but, like, you look at teams like Minnesota or other teams that have broken out when they're young, and it's like, well, you know, they can do it. And then, you know, it just feels like it's been a burden over and over to try to get old. They haven't gotten old. They can't break out when they're young, and you're just kind of stuck in this purgatory somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, that's the thing that I just despise about the wait for the next guy theory. You know, it's like 3 years ago you were saying the same thing, and the next guy didn't pan out. I mean, it's this cycle for 20 years where you constantly think that the young guys are better than the old guys, and then the young guys become old guys, and you're saying the same thing. It's like, you know, this is not a request. What?
I agree. It's like, you know, again, I think what I'm not talking so much about the wins and losses, although that's obviously the important part, but, you know, does the offense become what it's supposed to be? If you lose in games 37-34 and you're like, oh man, they got to get better on defense, that to me is preferable to losing a game 17-14 and going, well, the defense is playing well, but the offense, which is what they were all brought here to do, isn't any good. Like that, you know, that piece, you can fix that defense with recruiting and other things. The offense has to be the offense though, or otherwise, again, you're trying to be Northwestern without actually being Northwestern. So you want to move on to hoops. Dirk, you went and watched them play their lone loss against Nevada. What did you see out of Nebraska that day? I've covered the three wins, or, you know, three of them. You covered the loss. What was your impression of Nebraska that day against Nevada?
I got Florida A&M on Sunday, Sam. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. I get the sense that Nebraska has upgraded athletically quite a bit. I think there are bona fide Big Ten athletes on the floor. I'm not nearly as sold on their skill level, and I think the shooting thing is going to be a consistent concern all year. When you see the ball leave each of those guys' hands as a shooter, there's only about one or two guys where the ball leaves his hand and I say, I think that's going in.
Right.
And usually that's a pretty good tell about whether, you know, you're going to have a good shooting team or not. And I just don't see nearly enough pure shooters in Nebraska's rotation. And they're going to have to make shots in the Big Ten. I mean, if you think they're getting to the rim or, you know, going to get easy baskets, I think you're going to be waiting a long time for that. I mean, they are going to – defensively, Sam, I've been impressed.
Yeah, me too.
I think their ability to pressure and to force turnovers – now, some of that's not going to translate real well to the Big Ten. But, you know, Teddy Allen is – he gets his hands on everything. And, you know, there's some other guys out there that I think are are sort of good chaos defenders. You know, Trey McGowan's fits the bill there. But offensively, it's going to be ugly sometimes.
Their effort level is impressive. Like, I think Doc Sadler has them playing really hard on defense. Now, I mean, some of that's Hoiberg too, building a culture of guys that want to play hard. So one of the things that I do, and again, I'm just starting to cover the team, is I kind of watch the footwork and I kind of watch the effort level on defense. I'm not so much worried about who's making shots and who isn't. But at the beginning of each half, the effort level is really high. And then they wear down a little bit for two reasons. One, they only have an 8-man rotation because Derek Walker's suspended and Eduardo Andre's out, and Elijah Wood's not. I don't think that's going to be a guy they're going to play much. So they have an 8-man rotation, and you know, one of those guys is Lat Man, and he's being asked to do everything, which is hard. And then two, they get up and then they kind of, you know, they lay off a little bit, but their effort on defense is tremendous in the first 10 minutes of each half. Offensively, I think they get impatient. So I you know, like the game plan against South Dakota, who they beat by 7, and that's not a good team. That's a team with one really good player, a shooter who transferred from Augustana, who's the son of the women's basketball coach at USD, and a bunch of guys. And they're not a good team. They're a 10-11 win team in the Summit. But the problem was that the game plan against USD was get into the lane, they're going to close it off, then you either need to take shots or you need to find the pass and kick it out and hit threes. And they didn't do it. I mean, they just bowled their way in, and I think they got impatient. And I think some of that impatience is born out of a lack of consistency shooting the basketball. I think they're under 29% at this point from three. Obviously, it's only 4 games in. But at some point, you have to say the sample size is the sample size. Like, it's not going to alter when you start playing the awesome teams. Like, you know, if the sample size against the Florida A&Ms and, you know, these poor teams is 29%, kind of hard to see that going up to 43 or 44% when you get into the Big Ten play and you're playing top 10 teams. Like, it just seems unlikely. So they're going to have to find ways each night to manufacture three-point shooting. I love that Kobe Webster made 2 of them midway through the second half. I thought those 2 threes were maybe the difference in the game. I know that Hoiberg said Shamil Stevenson played great and Delano Banton and all that, but if they don't make those threes, they have a hard time putting that team away. And I think at the end of each game, Nebraska's going to battle fatigue. Because at the end of each half, actually, they're going to battle fatigue because they are not a deep – they only have 8 guys. And, again, they're asking Lat Main to do everything, to guard the 5, to be a shooter, sometimes to come out on the floor. Like, thus far, he might be in some ways their most valuable player because they're asking him to do everything. And the one thing he's got to do is shoot threes. And he has turned down some shots. He turned down one in the final minute against Nevada, which I didn't understand. I mean, if he makes that, they win the game. But Lat's doing everything else, and so, you know, you don't want to get too hard on what he is doing, because he's doing a lot. But it's a much improved team that has an absolute gulag coming up.
I was just going to ask Evan, because Sam might have looked this up. Evan, I'm pretty confident that as a non, you know, hourly Nebraska basketball follower that you probably have not looked this up. According to KenPom, they played 20 Big Ten games. How many of the 20 Big Ten games is Nebraska favored in? According to KenPom's projections.
4-0. Ouch. Okay.
That doesn't mean that he projects them to go 0-20, because, you know,
you add up the percentages and then you divide by the total number of games, and that's how
eventually you're going to win some games. But yep. Individual games, Nebraska, according to the analytics guru in college basketball, Nebraska does not have a better than 37% chance in any game on its Big Ten schedule to win.
And that's Penn State.
That is insane. Wow. That's the Penn State game at home. And obviously we know home court advantage is going to be of limited value this year. But it speaks to, you know, the strength of the league. It speaks to The fact that Nebraska this far does not look very good analytically, it's just going to be a slog. And I think that, you know, Hoiberg, even after the Nevada loss, I think he was wise to sort of put a positive spin on that and say we're playing for the long term here. We want to play our best basketball when it matters most, because they know what's coming. I mean, that coaching staff knows how hard this is going to be, and yep. and they've got to find a way to keep the spirit of that team up.
Yes. Now, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but there's going to be some games this season where I think Fred Hoiberg's going to have the coaching advantage, not only in who he is as a coach, but his bench, because he's got two head coaches on his bench, essentially. I mean, two long-term head coaches. There's going to be a few moments this season where Fred's got a slight advantage and they're going to outfox somebody. And I'll just throw Indiana out there, because I don't think Indiana is that well coached. But generally, night in, night out, they're going to be fighting an uphill battle against most of the teams in the league, because most of the teams in the league have really good coaches and they have got really good defenders. And Wisconsin will defend your shorts off, and Iowa will go the other way. They're going to try to score 100 on you. So, you know, it's just a hard, it's a hard go, but you know, like I think they're going to be 5-1 when they play Creighton. I do think they'll beat Georgia Tech. I don't think Georgia Tech's very good. I think they'll be 5-1 when they play Creighton. I think that game will absolutely be more competitive than last year. How competitive? Depends on how many threes Creighton makes. if Creighton makes 16 threes, they could win by 20, because they're, you know, when they make that many threes, they usually win by that much. So
I'm casually following Nebraska basketball. You guys have obviously put in more work. So to this point, do expectations for the season, are those lower than what you guys had preseason? Is it about the same? How have the proceedings thus far kind of affected how you think the rest of the year will go?
My expectations haven't changed much. I mean, I was probably a little more down on Nebraska basketball than the average, you know, fan. I'll bring my brother back into this. He's a big Nebraska basketball optimist, and I'm usually telling him this is not going to go well, but maybe that's just my pessimist nature. But I think it's, you know, Nebraska's just got a long way to go, and I'm encouraged again. I'm encouraged by the defensive energy and the athleticism. I'm less encouraged by some of the individual skill level. I think, you know, Hoiberg's going to need a really good recruiting class to get over the hump, and fortunately for him, that appears to be on the way.
Evan, if this team goes, they're not going to probably play 27. They won't. But let's say they did. If they played 27 games and they went 12-15, they would be really good. That's not an exaggeration. That would be impressive to me, because that would mean that they won, you know, they won five games in non-conference. I don't anticipate they're going to be Creighton. And then they won seven games in the league, which means they didn't just beat the Rummies. I mean, they didn't beat Northwestern and Penn State. They went and beat Purdue and Indiana and stole one from Illinois or something. I mean, if they go 12-15, that's a good season. And that's not to diminish anything that Nebraska is doing, but to just outline how great the league is. If they somehow get to 14-13, they're going to the NCAA tournament. And that's how good the league is. So, I would say that my expectations haven't changed much because, and I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast, I wasn't really sure how good their three-point shooting would be. I was skeptical of that, but I thought their defense would be better, and it is. And so, and that wasn't, I mean, I think every person covering the team thought that. Like, I'm not unique in my insights there. I think everything's kind of played out as expected. I think they could have won the Nevada game. They missed a lot of threes, and that was a little bit concerning. But, you know, if they had played St. Louis and San Francisco like they intended to in the golden window, I don't think they'd be at 3-1 right now, because the teams they have played, North Dakota State and South Dakota, those two teams were very good last year and would have beaten this Nebraska team potentially this year. But North Dakota State and South Dakota this year are not very good. They're not.
Yeah, San Francisco getting knocked out and going to play Virginia instead was a nice little brush of luck.
And then they routed. I mean, they routed Nevada. They beat them bad. I think they beat them by 25. So, and St. Louis is good too. So all those things, yeah. You know, we'll just have to see where it kind of goes. I would still say if they get to 10 to 12 wins, you know, Hoiberg, you know, is done an incredible job. I mean, the future is pretty bright. You realize none of these guys are going to leave. I mean, I suppose they could leave in the sense that.
They will leave.
They'll leave. Well, there'll be people. What I mean is that I don't think these – I think these guys – the guys that leave will be the guys that leave because we think it would be better if you left. I don't think it's one of these. These aren't guys that are going to transfer somewhere else. They don't have a lot of options to just, I mean, some of these guys are second tier transfers, right? So like Trey McGowan can't just leave and go somewhere else without having to sit out a year. So what I mean is that a lot of these guys are going to be back. It's not going to be like last year, when it was Thor, a Cole, and Ivan. You know, Delano Band's not going anywhere, I don't think. McGowan's isn't going anywhere. Teddy's not going anywhere. Lat Man's going to be there. I think Ivan will be there. Shamil Stevenson's here.
Sam, I know what you're saying. And
does that make sense?
Yeah, it's good logic. But if you go 7-23 or 7-20, sometimes guys just leave. So
yeah, that's possible.
That's one, you know, one reason why Nebraska needs to hold it together to some degree, because with next year's recruiting class, you know, you have a chance to build a nice little nucleus here. You've got to avoid bottoming out like Nebraska basketball so often does.
Right.
I mean, it just, when Nebraska basketball falls apart, you saw it in the Tim Miles era.
It gets ugly. You saw that more than once there.
So they got to avoid that, right?
I think they will. I mean, McGowan is not going anywhere. It goes without saying that he isn't. He's going to play.
No, I know, but there are guys who
– There'll be guys who consider it, but I don't anticipate Lat Man going on to his fourth school in 4 years. I think he's going to stick around. I think Banton's going to stick around. I know they want him to. I think a lot of the guys that left last year, I don't really think there was any broken hearts. I mean, there just wasn't. You couldn't keep some of those guys on the team. I mean, some of them weren't going to be on the team. They were basically thrown off because they didn't show up for practice. But I just anticipate most of this bunch coming back next year and then adding Bryce McGowan's to that. You can see the 2 or 3 year outlay in this better than you can the football side. Like you just, in football side, it's harder to see what the trajectory is going to be because you don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Are you going to look for, like, if you're Nebraska, there's going to be a huge transfer market in the offseason. You know you may even lose a quarterback to transfer. Don't you have to look, at least look, and see if there's a quarterback out there who can do what you want to do better than what's being done right now?
There happens to be a guy.
Yeah. I don't know about him. I don't know.
I'm talking about Mackenzie Milton.
I know. I don't know about him.
I know. I was just letting your listeners know who I was talking about.
That's a touchy one, because that would be very hard on him, I think, because he deserves a chance to really start. You know, he'd have to come in. He'd come in here with the expectation of having to be what he was in 2017, and that's not fair. You know, and the pressure here is so immense that. Just so immense that, you know, I don't know, but a name that I've thrown out, and of course, no one's given me this name. This is just somebody I'm thinking of. You know, Kansas State scholar Thompson, I think you got to look at that. Like, I'm not saying he's the answer, but I'm saying here's a guy that's played some pretty high-level football for another school. He's got a big arm. He's tall. He can see over a defense. Do you at least consider it? Like, do you kick the tires on that? Do you say, is there another De'Aaron King in college football that we'd be willing to come here? I don't know who the hell that is. You know, I really don't. If I don't know that there is one, but do you look for that? Like, you have to, you at least have to chew on it, you know, and because unless you feel like Luke McCaffrey is going to make a ginormous jump, then I think what you're looking at, you're kind of staring at, you know, a pretty good but not great quarterback. And does this offense function with pretty good but not great at QB?
Isn't that kind of another question of the whole, like, win now versus long-term thing? I mean, that's what Scott Frost talked a lot about with the Martinez-McCaffrey battle. You know, if Luke McCaffrey is the long-term guy, why not give him the snaps? Because he feels the pressure to win now. So if you go out and you do that, I mean, that's sending another signal, man, that Scott Frost is feeling the pressure to win now. He's feeling the weight from the fan base, from the state to win now. And you know, it's really not all that different from the Joe Burrow situation from a couple of years ago, where they felt like, I mean, at that time, they stuck with Martinez because he was the future, right? He was a freshman or sophomore.
Yes, I still think that was a good decision based on what they knew at the time.
This is a similar sort of situation where you go with the guy that you have that you believe to be the long-term guy, or you explore for somebody for, you know, shorter-term gains. It's really fascinating to see if they would go a different direction this time.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it a win-now situation, Evan. Like, I think you really have to assess the last three games of this season, I think, need to be taken as, okay, let's dig really hard into, is the guy here? Do we have the trigger man who can make all the throws and do all the things we want? Like, I think you really have to burrow into that. And if you don't, then, okay, is Logan Smothers that guy? Can we supercharge that thing fast? Okay, if we don't have that, then who? Who is it? Heinrich? Is it Heinrich Harburg? I mean, I've seen Harburg. I think you have too. That looks like a couple of years. Like, that doesn't look like a guy that's going to come in and light it up right away. You know who else is available, don't you, Dirk?
Who?
Just got cut by the Royals yesterday.
Wouldn't that be a story?
Yeah, it would.
31-year-old Bubba Starling.
Bubba! Yeah. Bubba Starling got cut by the Royals yesterday.
Yeah, it's kind of heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is, actually, yeah. I think he really wanted to make it work. And you covered him. You wrote a great story about him. He picked his third weakest sport in which to excel, in my opinion.
Or what you saying, basketball or what?
Baseball. I think football was the strongest sport.
I agree with that. What was second?
Basketball. Not for a professional level, but Bubba really struggled. I mean, when you watched him play baseball, and I watched a couple of games, I'm like, his speed is amazing. He's not a hitter, you know, like, he got a hit. And so he got cut. I know he didn't pick his strongest sport.
No, it's – I've been covering Nebraska athletics for 18 years. That's one of the five biggest what-ifs for me. I realized there was a lot of skepticism about, you know, his polish and all that. But man, when you watched him play, he was – you hadn't seen anything like that before. I hadn't seen anything like it before. The combination of speed and power – he was something. He had I don't want to say it was, you know, Tebow-esque or anything like that, but there was something special about him that I think would have translated really well to a starting quarterback role.
I agree with you. My understanding of his personality is he wasn't Tebow-esque, but athletically he was, and it would have been really fascinating to watch that guy compete against Taylor Martinez, because it would have been an even fight. I think there was a lot of sentimentality that leaned toward Taylor, especially from Bo's side back in 2011. But Tim Beck liked Bubba Starling, and it would have been an even fight. I don't think Taylor ever had an even fight when he was at Nebraska. I really don't. I think it was always, he's our guy. There's literally no one else here who's even at close to as good as he is, he's our guy. And that was true, by the way. And Bubba would have made it.
Yeah, you have to remember the context of that, because it was right after 2010.
Yeah.
You know, Taylor was sort of, he was still in this position where everybody just thought, boy, if he can be healthy,
right?
If he can regain what he had the first 7 or 8 games of the year, the sky's the limit for Taylor Martinez. If Bubba would have come around 1 year later, I think the scenario might have been different.
Sure. And Taylor Martinez is a better quarterback than any quarterback they've had since they had him. And I'm comfortable saying that. Like, I don't have any hesitation saying he's better than the guys they got there now. Simultaneously, Bubba is a great what if. Like, it's – you do wonder if they could have figured out a way to help him throw, because he wasn't the best thrower in the world, but he had an arm that could throw it, you know, 75 yards. If they could help him figure out his throwing motion. Again, I think Tebow-esque is not that far off of a comparison. But he's available again at 31. You know he's in shape. I'm sure he's healthy.
No, he's not 31. I was just kidding about that. He's like, what, 20? He'd be 28. He graduated in 2011, so he'd be 28.
He's healthy. You know he's in shape. He doesn't have a beer belly. He's just coming off a season. He's in great shape. Oh, how can you not? How can you not look at it?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine that story? What would Peter Gammon say?
<That's>, I don't. I wonder if Bubba is still represented by Boris. But no, I don't know. Like, it could happen. It won't happen. I'm kidding.
It won't happen.
My goodness, wouldn't that be interesting if he was like, look, I'm going to go ahead and try football now. I'm 20 years old. I'm going to go to college. He's got all the money in the world. Doesn't need a scholarship. He could walk on anywhere he wants. Could pay for his own school, I suppose. He could go anywhere. Try anything. Why not? I don't think he would have – I think he would have been not welcomed by the Bo Pelini staff, because they felt burned by what he did, which is absurd. But I don't think Bo would have wanted him back, you know, because he was – no. But I wonder about Scott. Like, why not? What do you lose if he walks on and he just tries out?
Nothing. Hey, you might be able to put him at receiver, Sam, and make him your number one receiver.
You could!
It'd be better than what we got.
Call Monty Harrison up. He's a better baseball player. See if he wants to play. Now, when I watch Monty Harrison play, I'm like, that guy's going to play in the major leagues. That was a different player. That was a different old deal. Like, Monty Harrison looks like the real deal playing baseball. But maybe Bubba. All right. We just talked about Bubba Starling for 10 minutes. I'm so glad we spent 10 minutes talking about that instead of 10 minutes about Mackenzie Milton. Because I don't want it. I think that kid is under an enormous amount of pressure if he come to Nebraska, and it'd almost be unfair. So
I'm disappointed that we didn't spend 10 minutes talking about the Ohio State Big Ten situation. That's the real red meat in Husker Nation right now.
It could happen. It's entirely possible. I think if it's at all within Jim Harbaugh's power to play the game, they will. I don't know that it's going to be up to him. And then I think if they can move games around, they would probably send Rutgers to Nebraska and have Ohio State play Maryland instead of doing an Ohio State-Nebraska rematch. Because what really is sacred about Rutgers and Maryland? Nothing. There's nothing sacred about that. So, you know, I could see them doing that too and just working it around so they don't have to play Nebraska again. Because I think that would be so profoundly unfair to Nebraska to do that. And Nebraska would be in the position of saying no, because Northwestern apparently can say no to a rematch with Maryland, which is garbage. I think that's totally unfair.
Nebraska
would. And by the way, I'm not sure it would help Ohio State in the selection committee's eyes, right? Because I'm not sure they would look at that as a separate data point to beat the same team twice.
If it's Nebraska, yes.
Right, the same bad team twice. Yeah,
that's right. I think it would behoove them more to play Maryland. Correct. I think it would benefit them more to play them. But Nebraska wouldn't turn the game down. I think they would do it, but it would just be so manifestly unfair. and it would be sort of a cherry on top of the season. Will you guys play Ohio State for us? And Nebraska would be in a position of saying, no, we're not going to do it. I can't believe that Northwestern has that option. I can't believe it. That you set up a pathway to have games played, including a rematch, and Northwestern's like, no, we don't want to do it. Come on. Why? Like, why would you set it up that way? Because, by the way, Maryland can still win the Big Ten East if Ohio State dips below the six-game threshold, and Wisconsin can win, or Iowa could win the Big Ten West if Northwestern hadn't pulled what it pulled. Wisconsin can still win it, by the way. If Wisconsin wins this week and they win next week and Northwestern lose to Illinois, Wisconsin wins the Big Ten West. No, they don't, because they're only playing five games.
No, yeah.
This thing has been mismanaged so badly from the start. And I think the common theme in all of it is it's the Big Ten trying to be stick to prestige and principles and tradition, and this is the way we do things because this is the way we've always done things. And they just didn't give themselves any flexibility, and it's just going to bite them in the butt. I hope Ohio State gets left out just because it'll embarrass the Big Ten.
It'll cost everyone a lot of money, though. That's why they're, probably not going to let that happen. But it is fascinating to watch Nebraska fans' reactions because they're on the one hand, they're just incensed that the Big Ten would make a different ruling. And, on the other hand, they do know they're probably the best team, and there's kind of a purity kind of side to what they think too. But it's been fascinating watching them kind of work through everything that's gone on here. And it's not over.
I totally believe the Big Ten should change its rules to get this thing figured out. I totally, totally, totally. Like, the Big Ten should have agreed to let Nebraska play non-conference games, and the Big Ten should change now. Consistency can sometimes be the hobgoblin of small minds. So do what you got to do to get your team in the CFP and worry about, the caterwauling later. I think Scott Frost would agree. I think Scott Frost is a best idea kind of guy. And I don't think he would say, well, no, because you didn't let us, you didn't help us out. Don't help them. I don't think he'd be that way. I think he would
who would complain at this point about an Ohio State Cincinnati, essentially a qualifier on December 12th or whatever date, is open. No. Put those two together, and the winner goes to the playoff. I mean, that's the best idea on the table. The Big Ten won't do it. Ohio State won't do it. But that's the solution here. Is just let Ohio State and Cincinnati play each other.
I still think Michigan's going to play that game. I if Michigan bails out, and it will not be Harbaugh that does it. It'll be their medical team. If they do that, I don't know about the donor base. I think they're going to lose some real support internally. I don't think you mess with that game. I think you you take your beating. And I think there's people within Michigan's donor base that are like, we don't care. You take your beating, but do not duck that game, and do not use, we've got 25 cases as a reason. Like, you contain the spread of this virus, and whatever's left, that's the team that takes the field, because Bo Schembechler would have done it that way, kind of thing.
My team's on the floor.
Right. I'm telling you, like, I think there's enough people still left at Michigan who feel that way, and I just got a sense that they'll do it, but you never know. All right, we got to go because Frost is going to talk to the media here in 15 minutes, and Evan's going to ask him about Mackenzie Milton.
Sure. He's not.
Hey, Scott. I asked Mackenzie Milton 3 years ago if he would come to Nebraska and follow you here, and there were people that didn't appreciate that question. Now I get to ask it for real. All right. Yeah. See you later.